Chapter 21. Rection. Amarok, Chenra's friend, lover, protagonist, he was dead. So was Joliad and many other wolves and foxes. They were all irretrievably lost. The war had claimed countless victims. Victims that Chenra had sent all to their doom. He regretted it, again and again. But the fact was that all the events could not be changed. That was now 16 years ago, past, also irretrievable. The shepherd dog was now 48 years old, and you could see it in his face, the fur of his muzzle was now grayed, some whiskers white, the eyelids looked tired and every day the gray hairs in his fur coat became more. He was still very strong, but his gait was a bit stiffer than before and he wagged his tail less often than usual. Chenra sat in his kitchen at the dining table and looked out the window into the small garden. It was autumn, and so the small trees bore colorful foliage. A light breeze blew some of them onto the lawn, whose blades of grass, damp with rain, yielded to the wind chime. The dog was thoughtful. What had brought all this? The great showdown, which he had only barely survived, had changed many things. Humans were now decimated, their kin countable. Thus, the joint government of Aramaria, consisting of foxes and wolves, decreed that Gajans had to register. Those who did not follow were imprisoned, and it was at the discretion of the authorities which of them could stay or settle where. The Empire of the Foxes was no longer called Aramaria, but Republic of Aram Samojedin area since a few years. What a name! It included the winner of the Long War. Although there was still a body of politicians, scientists and aristocrats, which was allowed to decide the fate of the country, it was not sovereign. Everything had to be done in agreement with the monarchy of Samojija, which now had a new, young king. Rection was the child born of Serena's rape of Amarok. He was now 16 years old and ascended the throne at the age of 14. Serena, who still held the reins firmly in her hands as queen regent, prepared her son to lead her nation on his own in the near future. Chenra had never met him, but had heard that he must be a very good-natured and patient wolf. The shepherd dog was not interested in world politics, because he had already fulfilled his task many years ago. He and his fellow wolves had devastatingly defeated the Gajans. With Amarok's death, the Aramarans felt satisfaction, surrendered and thus limited damage. Peace had returned to Alpha, Vol. Truth in silence. Dialogue after the dispute. Respect for each other. One could not speak of a friendship of nations, but all parties involved had agreed with the outcome of the fighting, the male still remembered it clearly. His people remained in Alsatianaya and he himself watched over the Ispasetka, because he no longer trusted the leader of his tribe. Oh dear, so much mail again, spoke the Kisar as he opened the mailbox and was met by a large load of writing. Very often, even after all these years, he received letters of thanks from various corners of the three empires involved in the war. Many revered him, thanked him for his service. Sometimes, even females wrote to him, proposed marriage and enclosed obscene pictures with their love letters. Didn't they know that he? In the meantime, he had gotten into the habit of sorting out the obvious envelopes without opening them. This writing, the ensnaring and licking of some anthros was getting on his nerves by now. What else did they want from him? He did what he had to do then, that was all. That was nothing he was proud of or imagined. Besides, he had not fought alone. Who paid homage to the deceased nowadays, except on specially designated memorial days? Finally, only a few letters remained, and besides a few advertising and official letters, one envelope in particular caught the male's eye. The address of the aged dog, who now lived permanently in Alsatianaya, was printed in gold letters of his native language and a border of the same color adorned the paper. He looked curious as he slowly opened the envelope, almost knocking over his cup of coffee in the process. He took out a noble-looking letterhead, written in Alsatiani in neat, beautiful handwriting. On it shone the flag of the Royal House of Samojija, a blue background against which the silhouettes of three male feral wolves in different colors were placed. Their two-dimensional bodies were decorated by a cross, a heart and an anchor. Next to each pictogram could be read a Latin word, fidem, amare, sp. They meant faith, love and hope. Looking at the flag, Gajas pondered and sighed. It was he who had thought up the wolves' emblem of dominion as the flag of their nation when he had started writing his book many years ago. Now that he was no longer the ruler of everything, not knowing when the story of the foxes, wolves and dogs would end, it seemed strange to him to have his own creation, this logo, in front of him. It also seemed strange to him that he was now no longer the omniscient narrator, but had to shape his life like everyone else, in uncertainty about the future. His thoughts ended and intently he read what someone had written to him in squiggly handwriting. "Dear Kesar. Honored sovereign of the Alsatian Empire. This is not a love letter, a declaration of friendship or a song of praise to you. You are reading an invitation to get to know each other. I would like to thank you personally for your service to our nations, to our entire world. This has not happened yet, which I truly regret. It has taken me a few years to understand what you have done and what all this means for all our lives. You knew my father, Amarok. Unfortunately, I cannot say that about myself. Therefore, I would like to ask you to tell me about him and his time with you at a meeting. This is an invitation, a request, not a command. But I would be very pleased if you would accept this offer and let me know when and where we can meet in a friendly way. This has been discussed with my mother, the Queen Regent. She has expressly agreed, even advocated, a meeting between us. I hope you will honor me soon, for I am sure you will have much to tell me, just as I will have many questions for you. In esteem, respect and curiosity about who you are. This paper was signed by none other than the King of Samogitia, Rexion." Immediately the dog noticed that the monarch must have discarded the etiquette of the court, according to which one always spoke of oneself in the pluralis majestatis. He was also surprised by the ease with which Rexion had written. He offered him a conversation, was curious and grateful at the same time. Even though Chenra was not politically involved, he had appropriate respect for the wolfish monarchy. They were each other's neighbors, the nations of Samogitia and Alsatianaya were closely connected. So why should it not be that he accepted this invitation and, in turn, drafted a terse letter announcing his coming? Surely he had many things to tell his former friend's son about his father. Also, some things would become uncomfortable. However, Gejaz knew that it was also part of the young monarch's growing up that he needed to know the whole truth about everything he had questions about. Talking to the young wolf would also help him come to terms with the past, put everything to rest, and regain inner peace. When Chenra arrived in Luna, he looked around, all the damage that the war had inflicted on this city had been repaired. He had not been here for a long time. It would never have occurred to him that this place could ever have looked any different. Luna was neat, orderly, and prepared. Everything was as it had always been. Just as the Wolf Queen wanted to see this place, in the meantime, the tarred streets that the Gajan had laid out, had been removed again. Many things were dismantled, some had been integrated into the cityscape, as long as it seemed useful to the Queen. Here it was wolfish again, free of people. In contrast to Aramaria, Samogitia, like the neighboring country of Alsatianaya, tolerated no earthlings on its soil. All the humans who had survived the battle, there had to be about 3,000, were now in the Fox Empire, almost exclusively in the west. They were defeated and under control. Soon, the news said, their deportation back to Gaja would begin. Before the end of the year, Alpha Vol would be completely free of earthlings. Arriving at the palace, Chenro was now standing in front of the garden gate. A servant looked snobbishly through his glass box and asked hoarsely, "Yes, please? I am Chenra Gejaz and I have to speak with His Majesty the King. I am announced. Please wait. We need to check this," the wolf said, typing away on a keyboard. After a moment, he said, "Very well, Lord Sovereign. Good day to you," and allowed the dog to enter through the gate. "Lord Sovereign my ass, wolf," grumbled Chenra crossly, but this did not impress the guard commander. Gejaz opened the door to the great hall and looked at the empty throne. Rexion and Serena were a little late, he thought, but used the time to look around. "Everything is still as I wrote it down. Fascinating," he spoke quietly to himself, looking at the pictures of the heirs to the throne from times past. Suddenly, a youthful male voice broke the silence, "Ah, there you are." The dog was startled and turned around. He looked into the face of a young wolf who was now standing in front of him. Eyes wide open, he stammered, "Why you're Rexion? The Rexion? Amarok's son?" The wolf grinned. It was impossible, but for a moment the Alsatian felt he was looking directly into the face of Amarok, his friend. Rexion was the same age when Amarok's story began, and he looked uncannily like him. "What's the matter with you?" asked the amused one when the elder did not close the catch again. You look like you've seen a ghost. Are you all right? It's nothing, Your Majesty. Forgive me, the dog spoke, whereupon the smiling young wolf offered to follow him with a gesture of his hand and a slight bow. Come on, Kisar, let's go for a walk in the garden. With pleasure, Your Majesty. When they arrived at the garden, Chenra noticed its size, and that there were many shrubs and flying insects. It was windless, only slightly cloudy, a beautiful autumn day. My mother sends her regards, Chenra. I'm afraid she couldn't wait. The Aramarans and we are negotiating in many different corners. Yeremia desires sole rule over her realm, but we want to ensure that Aramaria continues on the path toward meritocracy and does not become a dictatorship once again. You know, politics never sleeps. A meritocracy? The elder asked. I assumed that Aramaria would one day become a democracy. For 2 years already, it has been calling itself meritocratic. There may still be a long way to go to complete transformation, but we are working to ensure that in the future there will be a form of government there that can be called independent and reasonable. Therefore, the merits of the individual should also count, no longer a birthright or martial strength. Opportunities, we wish, should be equal for all, and rewards should be given to those who truly deserve it. The dog grinned and agreed, yes, I understand. I sincerely hope that Yeremia will also come to terms with this idea. There are many duties as a regent of one state, which must now provide for another in addition. Didn't you want to accompany your mother? After all, Samojija will soon be your country. Oh, you know, these things are always so troublesome, the king rebuffed, making a dismissive gesture with his hand as he walked, and besides, the foxes are always annoying with their demands. I don't mind that they don't want to give up their pride, but still, sometimes they go quite overboard. You know them. I believe that their empire can become a true meritocracy before the end of this decade and get a new addition to its name, if everyone joins in, that is. Then we should have officially established the first meritocratic republic on Alpha. Vol. The dog nodded thoughtfully and then asked, how is it that you don't speak in the pluralis majestatis like your mother, Your Majesty? I noticed it in your letter, so I thought I would ask you about it. Rexion assigned the elder a seat on a wooden bench and sat down as well. He let his gaze wander and leaned back, relaxed. My mother taught me that it makes sense to show respect to strangers and friends. However, I don't want to address myself as I would a stranger or friend. That wouldn't be me. I'm not a we, I'm just a me. It may bend tradition a bit, but it does not break it. I would also like to offer you the you. I am Rexion, not Your Majesty, not to you, who are a hero and, moreover, an Alsatian, not one of my subjects. This attitude and the offer that followed visibly surprised the person in question. Perplexed, he nodded and asked that the Wolf King also address him by his first name. So it's a deal, then, the wolf rejoiced, adding that politics would work that way, too. So, Chenra. Tell me who my father was. What was he like? He then asked. The dog sighed and pondered. Where should he start? My mother has already told me many things, about everything that happened years ago. She met my father here, in this castle, gave him honorary citizenship. Later, he helped her get into the bunker below the leader's headquarters in Bolmer. Oh, what am I talking about, you know all this anyway. After all, you are the architect. Or rather, you used to be. Rexion. I. If you know about it, if Serena told you all this, then surely you know that your father and I. And how we once parted, the shepherd stammered, lowering his head. But, unlike expected, the young wolf remained very calm and composed, he shrugged his shoulders and only uttered a questioning end. But Rexion. That all this happened is my fault. I wrote this story. I mean, me as a human being on Gaja. It is very complicated, but I am responsible for everything bad in this world. So, as well as his death. I'm sorry, I really am, the shepherd apologized and his eyes became moist. Chenra, whatever happened, I know that the Gajan snatched control of our world from you. Everything that happened after that is not your fault. The thing is, if my mother hadn't had sex with my father, I wouldn't be here. That may be, Gajas agreed, but it's also true that it was rape and that Amarok had no intention of becoming a father. She wouldn't have told you that, would she? Sure she did. She can't explain it, but I assume that she was directed by Jaja's spirit. Because I also know that she killed her and that the goddess went into her. I'm surprised how easy it is for you to deal with all of this. In fact, you should hate me. Everything I wrote down at some point led to Amarok's death. It would seem understandable to me if you had something like sheer hatred in you. The younger one sighed and looked at a petal lying on the ground. They were silent for a while, after which the king asked his counterpart, "Are you joking? I have hated you for a very long time. I swore I would have you executed if I ever met you in person." The Alsatian gulped. "Yet," the king continued, "I could not. After I understood all this, there was no longer any reason to be angry. My father was angry. I can understand his reaction, too. But that's how the actions ultimately led to me existing. Now, at some point, it is up to me to lead this realm. And I do not intend to become a despot or begin my reign by assassinating an old friend of my nation." Again he smiled. Chenra, however, could not believe it. This wolf, visually so similar to Amarok, was quite different from the latter. He was understanding, calm, and did not seem to feel hatred in the slightest. Surely he would become a great, righteous king whom the people loved. "I don't even know how to answer that, Rexion," he admitted. "I had assumed you were angry, filled with hatred, and bent on revenge. But that doesn't seem to be the case. How is it that you are so different?" The monarch stood up and Chenra did the same. Again, they walked a little and were silent for a moment. All the while, Gejaz looked sheepishly at the ground, which his companion noticed and suddenly put his hand on his shoulder. "All is well," he said, punctuated by a surprised look from the dog. "Isn't it everyone's wish that future generations learn from the mistakes of their predecessors and become more understanding so they don't happen again?" Now the Alsatian also smiled and raised his head again. "You are absolutely right. I have made mistakes. We all have, somehow. Some things went wrong, or intended differently. These things just happened and can't be changed. Then we should all learn from them so that they don't happen again. They say that history happens again and again in a similar form. But if we are strong enough, work on ourselves, then we can make sure it doesn't. We break the cycle." The male strolled back to the castle and Rexion spoke to one of his servants, "The Lord Sovereign and I are going out. Please see that the Queen is informed that it will probably be late." "Of course, Your Majesty." The shepherd dog was pleasantly surprised when the king smiled at him and said, "Come, Chenra. Let's go have a drink and talk about your troubled history and all of our futures. I'll show you how wolves really party." "Very well, Rexion," he received back approvingly from his counterpart, and so they walked toward downtown. Meanwhile, the young monarch asked the dog soldier about Amarok, saying that he was also a hero for him. He wanted to know everything about him, what he liked, what his characteristics were, his relationship with Chenra. "I'm sorry, but I have to pester you. After all, I also want to understand why I'm the way I am." The Alsatian spoke calmly, "That's all right. Enlightenment about history should be important for each of us. Your father was a brave wolf who wanted to hand himself over just to let the strife of nations end." An inner anger stirred in him when he had to admit that Amarok's plan failed, however, because Ardos, then his best friend and brother in spirit, supported the dastardly plan of the leader and Yeremia, who let Amarok walk into a trap. "Ardos was my last casualty of this war, after all," he grumbled, catching sight of one of the king's fangs. He understood immediately, but wanted to know what had happened right after his father's death. "Let's have a drink first, Rexion. I think after a glass or two of Capacci my tongue will loosen up and I'll find it easier." The wolf nodded in agreement. In a marketplace, a few paces away, Chenra saw a statue whose posture struck him as unusual. "Rexion, I'd like to take a look at that, if that's all right," he spoke, walking towards it, spellbound. "Of course," spoke the wolf and followed. Chapter 2. Journey to the Origin. Lightly walking through the castle garden, Chenra contemplated its appearance one more time. Every flower, every blade of grass, the order here, he had thought of all this as the creator of Vulpes Lupus Canis. Sadness came over him when he thought that soon all this would no longer exist, would never have existed. He sighed loudly and tried to distract himself from these feelings. After all, what he was about to do was supposed to end suffering, not create new suffering. While he would have liked to turn around and get to know Rexion better, every additional day he waited was now one too many. He could not, out of selfish motives like curiosity, not do something that he knew would change everything for the better. He walked briskly to a fast travel station to take a train toward Alsatianaya. He almost overlooked the fact that autumn had turned all the green into many shades of yellow and brown. The subtle beauty he had designed for the three realms of Aramaria, Samogitia, and Alsatianaya played a minor role in his book, but was always recognizable. The vastness of the lands, the many lakes and rivers, everything had its place, its existence, its justification in it. Just as the writer of a book was made of stardust, every being, every place, every thought had sprung from a pen whose ink was made of the same elements as he. During the train ride, the male dog thought about whether the architect knew what he was up to. After all, he had detached himself from his protagonist, leaving him thinking and acting independently. So, could he suspect something? Was he perhaps still steering? The Kisar sank into pondering, what would happen to all his acquaintances and the individual characters if he were actually successful? What did his plan mean for the Vulpes Lupus Canis, for his own existence? He had already told Rexion that they would never see each other again, but was that true? Everything was now uncertain. But this, it seemed, was the spirit of the life of an independent, striving individual. It seemed amazing to the dog how close his book was to the realities of the architect's reality. The world he imagined, the planet Alpha Vol, Aramaria, Samogitia, and Alsatianaya, all this was far from perfect. There was war, suffering, evil here. Why hadn't he created a fiction in which he could be happy? Self-hatred, self-flagellation? I may really understand little of your mind, human, though we are one and the same, he finally summed up his thoughts as the train found its terminus near the Alsatian border. Now the male dog had to walk a bit. Here he let the brooding end and breathed deeply and calmly. A beautiful day. Just right for the last one in which this world will matter, he spoke softly, arriving at his home after a while. Chenra immediately pushed aside his kitchen table and rolled up the gray carpet underneath, revealing a flap in the floorboard. Below was the small cellar of the house, where the dog kept his sword, the Ispasetka and the protector. While he had not thought he would ever have to wear it again in his life, he told himself that there was no way to know now what lay ahead. So he put on the breastplate and noticed that it still fit him perfectly after all these years. The Alsatian gently stroked the matte black, somewhat bluish shimmering material inside. What a beautiful, indestructible masterpiece. Whoever made it, sensational. Still fits. Lucky I haven't put on weight. He smiled, however, wearing the protector always meant danger ahead. If you are for protection, why did the architect create you? If he wants his children Joliad, Amarok and me dead, it makes no sense, the male thought to himself and imagined that the Gajan could also possess this piece in its reality. Perhaps this armor served as protection from a world that had to be just as evil and dangerous. Or was this part just a metaphor he had built into the story? Should this only be a symbol for psychological, not physical protection? Whatever it is, Gajan, this protection will not save you from what I will do, spoke the dog. I sat on my sick bed and read these lines from my book. What was this turn of events? I had never written it down like this. I would have known about it if it had been like this. Come on, tell me what it is you're going to do. Where is this info? Don't talk in riddles. I implore you, Chenra, don't do anything you might regret later, I said, reading the book. Why didn't he tell me what he was about to implement? I could feel his thoughts, but they were of no real importance. Damn. He protected himself by letting me sit there ignorantly. This dog took advantage of the fact that he could now act independently and shape history himself. I bit the insides of my cheeks and became angry. Shit, I shouted. I need to know. Briskly, the Kisar took the shining sword, put it in its scabbard and stowed the Ispasetka in a pouch attached to his belt. He climbed out of the cellar vault and looked around his apartment one last time. A frugal, low-key dog, he had furnished his home pragmatically and simply, white furniture, black dishes and cutlery, vases and other objects for contrast. There was no playfulness, no ornate style, but no clutter either. Everything had its place, almost like in the garden of the Wolf Queen. Functional simplicity meant order to the dog, and order meant security, clarity and tranquility to him. Well then, the dog sighed and left the house. Later, when he arrived at a fast travel station and wanted to go to Bolmer, he read on the display board that the current train would be cancelled. But the next one was to follow in a few moments. The male sat down and looked around. A few more passengers were walking up and down the platform. Some were studying information boards, others were talking to themselves about the train cancellation. Everything was as it always was. Nothing was perfect, no matter how hard they tried to optimize processes. Something always didn't fit, because something always didn't work as expected. The dog sighed and looked at the display. The next train was also to be cancelled today, and the following one as well. There was no indication of a general disruption. The trains were simply not running. I can't remember one situation where several trains didn't run as scheduled as a result, he mused, then cringed inwardly. Oh no, he said to himself, because he understood that it was I, the architect, who was trying to stop him. The Kisar looked angrily at the sky and spoke directly to me, come on. Let it be. I'll walk if need be. I understood that more was needed to stop him. The sovereign had already stood up again when he heard a whirring sound, which was very quiet at first and then became louder and louder. He guessed that a train was approaching, and the sound indicated that it was approaching at high speed and did not seem to slow down. What the? He wondered in a whisper, his eyes widening as he saw the speeding train approaching. I let the train enter the station at maximum speed, so that in a slight curve it was torn out of the track with a thunderous noise, overturned in its entire length and missed my protagonist's head by a hair's breadth. Shocked, the latter froze with its muzzle open and its heart racing as it heard the train, along with its passengers inside, hit the grass behind it and crash into a tree. The vehicle was torn apart and caught fire. Loud screams and wails reached the dog's ears. This couldn't have really happened. By the gods! This could not have happened. Leave it! I shouted angrily, clawing doggedly at the striped blanket of my hospital bed with one hand. Suddenly I was startled when I read the next line of the novel, because what Gay Jays was now shouting was again clearly directed at me, no, I will not. And even if you take the whole world apart, you will never stop me. Stunned, I now froze and could only read on, unable to act. The screams did not leave the dog cold, but he could not help the passengers. As burning bodies ran toward him, flailing their arms, Chenra felt the inner conflict of wanting to help but not being able to, since all this would never have happened in a short time anyway. Oh, damn it. I'm sorry. He exclaimed, turning away from the action and running. In no time at all, dark clouds gathered and drops began to fall to the earth. Rain began to fall and loud thunder could be heard. The rustling of the colorful treetops almost choked the dog's words as he shouted, "You're not going to stop me. Go fuck yourself." I played with him a bit, had lightning strike a nearby tree and split its trunk with a loud crash. Chenra was startled, but courageously showed his fangs and ran even faster. His clothes were now completely soaked and heavy, and only with difficulty did he manage to orient himself in the gray of the scenery. However, he was not deterred and his legs did not stop carrying him further and further. Whatever I tried, I would not be able to break his will. On the other hand, I could not possibly let him do what he was about to implement. I suspected that he would try to change the course of history, but I could not imagine what his next steps would be. The Alsatian walked for quite a while through the rain, whose intensity diminished, until he stood on the hill not far from Bolmer, where Amarok and Joliad were buried. The Kopacheka tree bore little foliage now, for even it could not escape the natural change of the seasons. Its broad trunk glistened damply and the moss that had settled on it was saturated, bright green because it was now bulging with water. For a brief moment, the dog paused and gazed in the direction of the imperial capital, while exhausted, he leaned his head against the trunk of the tree and the rain slid down him. Oh, you too. I miss you, he spoke to himself and sighed. I promise I'll make it all up to you. I give you my word. It almost seemed as if his former companions were answering him, for the thunder now became quiet and the rain ended abruptly. The clouds moved away, giving the sun back its place, as the male continued on his way, walking further through the wet grass, which made a rustling sound with each step. Arriving at the outskirts of Bolmer, Chenra climbed into a transport tube and set the center of Bolmer as the destination on the console. Now I was startled and stopped reading. Chenra, please don't do that. I know what you're up to. Let's talk about it. Please. I promise we'll figure it out, I pleaded, because I understood what my dog was about to do. After rematerializing in the large square in the center of the city, the Kesar stepped out of the tube and walked purposefully towards the statue, which bore the name Fox McLeod. The imposing structure rose steadfastly into the sky, having withstood the war and the destruction of many years. Chenra had correctly recognized that this landmark was the symbol of one of my ideals. And for ideals it was true that nothing in the world could overthrow them, harm them or make them forgotten. The soldier noticed that no one was in the square, but this was not surprising because of the previous storm. Fascinating, he thought, that it really hasn't been destroyed. Thank you, Rexion, for bringing this to my attention. Dreams have a certain power and show us what we care about, what moves us, what is most sacred to us. No, Chenra. Don't do that. I'm warning you, I shouted angrily, my eyes now wide open as I read. Oh yes, I will, he replied, smiling smugly as he set about climbing up the statue to reach its outstretched arm. Quickly taking a pen from the jar on the nightstand, I scribbled a few words in my book and made the city shake. The swaying of the ground caused Gage A's to slip on the wet, slippery surface and fall to the ground with a yelp. Quick as a flash he stood up again and shouted, "Oh no! You're not stopping me!" I let the intensity of the quake increase, with the first walls of the surrounding buildings cracking, stones coming loose from them, and windows shattering with a clang. The shepherd was visibly struggling to keep his balance and knew that if he didn't hurry, the statue would be destroyed by the eruptions and his plan would be ruined. He knew that nothing could harm it that came from Alpha Vol, but this did not apply to what I added from Gaja, from my story. The male stumbled, fell again, but righted himself. He staggered to the fox figure and clutched the lower part as strong winds started, lightning shone again in the sky and thunderous noise broke over the central square. The fur of my protagonist blew and got wet again, as I let a mixture of hail and rain set in by a few entries with the pen. His arm strained, the Alsatian braced himself against the storm that was growing stronger. He squinted his eyes and shouted threats that were almost drowned out by all the noise. Sinking? Yes, that's it. That's it. I don't want to kill you, Chenra, but I can't let that statue stand, I spoke. I'm sorry, but I have to make you feel if you won't listen. Then, when the male opened his eyes, he could see meter-high waves of water pushing through the alleys of the city in his direction, taking everything in their path with them. His eyes froze open as the wave of a tsunami reflected blue in them. Wherever the water suddenly came from, time was pressing. What? Shouted the sheepdog in shock. You're destroying the whole town to stop me? Are you serious? Then he gathered all his strength and again climbed up the stone landmark, which seemed to be so stable that the previous quake could not destroy it. Straining, he clung to the torso with his arm and unsheathed the sword. Snorting, he doggedly stretched out his arm, but did not reach the hand of the statue by a few centimeters. Come on! He exclaimed tensely, biting his tongue and scrunching his eyelids together as he moaned, strained and fought for every millimeter. Finally he managed it, he put the handle of the weapon into the hand of the statue so that it was pointed towards the sky and its blade reflected the light of the flickering lightning. The lettering on it began to glow. But nothing else happened. Gage's climbed back down, held onto the monument and continued to resist the storm. He looked alternately at the sword and at the approaching masses of water. Damn. I have to hurry up. Why isn't anything happening? He hastily asked himself. Crap. I forgot the stone, he mused, where might it belong? He looked at the details of the statue and noticed that on its base, between the sitter's legs, there was a small depression. The male grinned, visibly enlightened, and took the Ispaseka from his pouch. With his trembling hand, he placed it so that it fit exactly into the indentation. Suddenly, the characters on the stone began to glow as well, and the dog's eyes snapped open as he heard verses that must have come from a very ancient Gajan language manifesting in his mind. Tidal waves approached quickly from all directions and the first objects flew out of them towards the dog. He squinted his eyes and held his arms protectively in front of them, because the water and him were separated by only a few meters. Suddenly, time stopped and silence fell. The water, the debris, the raindrops, nothing moved anymore. Slowly, the Kesar lowered his arms and released his petrified gaze. Puzzled, he asked choppily, "What the?" A few centimeters in front of his body the wave had stopped, could not carry him away and destroy the statue. No. Damn it. I screamed angrily, shouting no, no, no. Over and over again, furiously drumming my fists on the pages of the book on my lap. Everything around Chenra became more and more bathed in white until a broad beam of light emerged from the sword that seemed to reach into space. It was dead silent around him, and the male could see a mysterious silhouette, shaped like an anthro, wrap itself around the beam of light and quickly glide along it towards the sky. Area? He asked, calling out, and then heard a soft, feminine voice saying in his mind, I will protect you on your journey, Chenra. I thank you. You have thus fulfilled my destiny, and now I will help you fulfill yours. When I had calmed down and realized that the dog would escape me by a hair's breadth, the question of how forced itself upon me. I knew that Aria was in the sword in the form of a ghost. But I had no intention of ever releasing her from it. It seemed as if the goddess herself made the decision to stand in the way of my violence against Gajay's. What this one did not know, he did not carry his name without reason, who honors the mother and is from the earth, he had brought the wolf mother of all to this place, so that she could protect him from what should happen now. His journey led to Gajay, to me. The one who had created Aria and him, like everything else that existed in the Vulpes Lupus Canis. Everything around him turned into white light and the outlines of the surroundings disappeared. A strong tingling sensation ran through the dog's body as he raised his arms, caught sight of his hands and realized that they were beginning to dissolve. I hope I did the right thing, he thought, feeling true fear for the first time in his life. What if he was wrong and now had to die? Would the mother really be able to protect him? Sharp pain, all over the body, made Chenra start to scream and writhe. Surrounded by brightness, he fell on his side, closed his eyes and felt like he was being torn apart. Several times he turned, alternately panting and screaming, full of fear of losing everything. Then everything was quiet. It was quiet and perfect. A smooth, reflective surface of water. The Agnes of Vito, surrounded by dark nothingness. Suddenly, a drop of water hit the surface of the lake, creating commotion and a distortion of Chenra's reflection on it. A loud dripping sound was heard. Amarok's voice rang out, which said joyfully, Yes, we will always be together, my little fox. Joliad spoke, I am very much looking forward to it, my darling. The architect's voice, Sure, I enjoyed the time I had together with my children. What father doesn't? But even the years together end at some point. So you just hope to have given them all the values for an upright life. Then Carteron, I want my people to show courage, not fear. We walk upright whenever it is called for. We are one spirit, one idea, one family. Serena, surely you know what your friendship means to our people, don't you, Chenra? Aram, if you're afraid that a small change in the past might have a big impact on the present. Aria's voice completed, then why don't you think about the fact that everything you do in the present will also have a great impact on the future? Chenra opened his eyes, he looked into the cloudless sky, in which a few birds were circling. There was no wind and it was exceptionally warm, almost hot, around him. The dog was breathing heavily. What had he just experienced? Where were all those familiar voices coming from? What were they trying to tell him? They were not sayings that he, who knew the contents of his book, had ever written down. Carteron, Joliad, Amarok, Aram, and Aria. They were all dead. Had they really said these things once? Why didn't he remember them? What did they mean? Ah. Ouch. Complained the Alsatian, straightening up. He twisted his head in different directions, causing his joints and vertebrae to crack audibly. Sitting down, he looked around and realized that he was surrounded by sand. Dunes were visible in the distance. No greenery was here, no trees, no grass, only yellow sand. Where am I? Asked Chenra quietly, standing up. He was sure that he was still alive, that the wolf mother had protected him. It was clear that the statue in Bulmer must have teleported him somewhere. But where? The male had hoped to get to Gajay, and with the help of the Ispasetka, the point of origin, also to the past, but had that actually happened? On Alpha Vol, he knew, he was not. There were no deserts there. He had never seen such a large amount of sand. He had to be on Gajay. But where and, more importantly, when was he? The dog looked at the sun and knew, if he didn't find shade somewhere quickly, He would have to die of thirst. Furry anthros were not designed for such temperatures and environments in the long run. The fur protected them from cold and heat, but what he found here, he could not survive for long. The Kisar was aware of that. "Wherever I am, I'd better get moving," he said to himself and just walked straight ahead. After all, it made no difference in which direction he walked. Eventually he would find out where he was now. Suddenly, the thread of Chenra's story had disappeared from my view. I read that he was in another place, but I did not know where it was. I called out for him, his name, his title, but he no longer answered me. So I sat on my bed and was desperate. The dog, he was probably on my planet. The text went on, but differently than I had written it down. I could not steer now, only read on. Everything what happened, I had to follow idly, without that I could have guessed where he was and what would happen now. My eyes became moist when I realized that I had lost the wheel. Everything had now slipped out of my hands and I had no idea what Chenra would do now. I became angry and shouted again, drumming with my fists on the book, which lay on my emaciated, pale legs, "You fucking story. I hate you. And I hate you, Chenra. Damn you. Where are you?" The Alsatian kept running incessantly until he started panting. So little oxygen, such warm air. There was no path to be seen, no change in sight. What kind of barren, hostile place was this? He must have walked for a few hours. Each step seemed to him as if he had weights on his paws, which sank again and again in the hot, golden powder. Finally, he could go no further, dropped into the sand and looked up at the sky. "I guess it never ends," he said to himself, panting faster and feeling like his whole skin was on fire. Obviously, there was no way out of here. He had to die and bury his plan. Completely in vain, he had tried to get to Gaja and nothing had come of it. His throat burned with every breath and his thirst increased. He closed his eyes as a light breeze blew grains of sand against his face, bound into a brown, viscous mass by the saliva running down. His protector cooled him a bit, made sure he didn't instantly boil over inside. "Tired, so tired," thought the male, his breathing becoming slower and shallower again. When delirium set in the dog's head, he lost his strength. He was suddenly frightened, because someone had thrown sand in his face. He quickly straightened his upper body and coughed. When he looked up and put his hand protectively in front of his face, he looked into the big eyes of an unknown animal, which licked his forehead with a long, sticky tongue. When the view cleared, the Kisar realized that it was a camel. On it sat a figure, whose head was wrapped with cloth. It spoke in a language incomprehensible to Chenra, but seemed cheerful and well-meaning. With an elegant leap, the creature climbed down from the camel and bent toward the shepherd, who could then see two brown eyes through a slit in the fabric, which undoubtedly had to belong to a Gajan. Immediately, the Alsatian smiled, then chuckled and dropped back into the sand. "I did it," he rejoiced, holding his hands in front of his face. "I'm on Gaja. By the gods, I'm there. Aria, thank you." The human looked irritated, not understanding why the stranger was laughing. "Alam wa salam. Is everything all right with you, dog god?" he asked when he realized that Gajaz was using a different language from his own. He spoke somewhat brokenly and with a smoky voice, but did not appear dangerous or aggressive. The dog straightened up again and finished his laughter. "All is well," he spoke. "I made it. I'm exactly where I wanted to be." Unprompted, the human held out a leather hose to his counterpart and offered, "Drink, dog god, drink." Hastily, the male dog took the hose, opened its cap and poured the water down his throat. With a loud gulp, he rinsed the sand from his throat and the wet cooled his tongue, which was swollen from the heat. Watching him attentively, the man smiled, "They call me Elioni. How did you get out this far? Don't you know it's dangerous to travel the Black Country without water and supplies?" The Kisar finished drinking and thanked him several times, breathing hastily. This man, whoever he was, had just saved his life. "The Black Country? Honestly, I don't see anything black here. Where am I?" The human knelt down next to the dog and removed the cloth band from his face so Chenra could make out a middle-aged man who had to be of Arab descent. "How about you tell me your name first?" he spoke. "Oh, yes," spoke the Alsatian, "I should. I'm sorry. I'm Chenra Gajaz, And I've come from so far away you won't believe me. I can't explain to myself how it happened, but now I'm here. Wherever that may be. Elione looked incredulous and then chuckled, Are you telling me you don't know how you got here? You are in Tamari, my friend. Tamari? Is that true? The male spoke perplexed and opened his mouth. Now it was clear to him where he was. I'm in Egypt? That's. What, Egypt? But why? Why should your origin be there? I am your creator, I shouted loudly and dropped my jaw. I sent for a nurse and asked her to get me books from the hospital library. What kind of books do you need? She asked. Hastily I had put aside the Vulpes Lupus Canis and spoke, Egypt. I need everything about Egypt, about the old and the new empire. If he actually managed to get to Gaja, then I need to know why he is there. The Ispaseka has brought him to some point in history, and I need to know which one. The nurse looked incomprehensibly, who is where? What do you mean? I had no time for explanations and asked her not to ask any questions, but to quickly get me the requested books. I suspected that this dog could not have wandered around without a trace in time. Therefore, I had to try to find the when again. I knew how he worked and that he had turned against me. In turn, he knew that I could continue to read what he was doing. Therefore, he would also avoid as much as possible to put me on his track and to stop him. If I would know when in the history of my world he appeared, then certainly also what he intended. By rewriting some pages of my work I could have possibly directed him again. But since I wanted to know why he had appeared in such a distant country, I decided to let him, as long as this would not become dangerous for my history. When the nurse returned after a while with a stack of books, I thanked her curtly and immediately began to read one. I noticed a strange coincidence as I did so, when I remembered that Serena and Amarok found books on Greek and Egyptian mythology at the leader's headquarters in Bolmer, I realized that I had known all along where Chenra was going. After all, the oldest known mentions of anthropomorphic beings came from this very land. However, these myths were many hundreds of years old. What did they have to do with Chenra and the Vulpes Lupus Canis? I also remembered that Anubis had met me some time ago, together with Chenra. Until the time of my realizations, which I gained, I thought it had only been a dream. Now I realized that they had actually been with me, I'd almost died, and my shepherd dog had saved my life by negotiating with the god of the underworld, the Duat. When are you, Chenra? I whispered, continuing to read my book. The Arab interrupted the male, Please don't call my country what the Greeks and Romans do. A terrible word, if you ask me. But the dog was stunned. He stood up and his counterpart did the same. He was a bit wobbly on his feet and held onto the camel's body with one hand. What year is it? He asked. Elione did not understand, What do you mean by year, dog god? He pondered for a moment and then asked, Has the savior of Christians already been born? Again he was met with incomprehension, Savior of Christians? What are you talking about, friend? Immediately it became clear to the shepherd, and also me reading, that he must be at a time before the birth of Jesus. If the so-called Redeemer had already been born, presumably every man would have known it already. Okay, Gajes now said thoughtfully, then that means I've traveled over 2,000 years into the past. That's amazing. The Ispaseka really can do it. So it's true what they say about it. But why here? Why so far back in time? What does this have to do with the origin of my story? Very confusing. Whatever, the Arab rebuffed, interrupting the musing. If you want, I'll take you to Yenebian. You can walk, of course, but on Semirana, my beauty, we need only one day. Lovingly, he patted the flank of the large mount, which gave a deep gurgle of affection. The Kisar nodded and thanked Elione for helping him, even though the dog was a stranger to him. Stranger? The other spoke as he tied the scrap of cloth back around his head to protect himself from the drifts of the sand. You are one of the races of the gods. It is bad luck not to shake hands with one of you. After all, I don't want to bring disaster on my wives and children. As they rode off, comfortable as camels are, Chenra held his rescuer's hips and asked, Gods? I am not a god. I am. Oh, now I understand. It's all good. Yes, then I guess I am one of them. At least from your point of view. The Tamrian shook his head, You must have taken a blow to the head, confused as you are talking. Or maybe it's the slice of Ries that's clouded your mind. The male realized that he had to be very careful in his choice of words. If he was indeed in Egypt sometime 2,000 years ago, then some of the inhabitants would consider him a god being and probably even worship him. He was also not surprised that his helper did not find the canine appearance unusual. On Gaja there were a lot of reliefs and murals on which animal humans could be seen. Since this man did not seem to be surprised by Chenra's appearance, he concluded that the modern findings from Egypt must all be based on actual facts. Very little did the Alsatian know about this land. However, as a Gajan, which he was after all, he had heard of its mythology. He had always wondered what could be true about all that was known from science fiction books and movies. Anthropomorphic beings had actually existed on Gaja, but no one had been able to prove this in modern times. Why did they no longer exist in modern times, only on Alpha Vol? Probably assuming that the architect could still follow his steps, reading the events, Chenra avoided a question about the current region of Egypt. It would have been conceivable that the creator of the Vulpes Lupus Canis would be able to delimit the year in which the dog was now. Get some sleep, friend. I'll keep my eyes open. Your body is still weak, the Arab spoke and, staring thoughtfully into the distance, sucked on a green leaf. The Alsatian sighed and confessed that his rescuer spoke true words. So he leaned forward and rested his head on the rider's back. A few seconds later, he fixed in his mind the rhythmic walking movements of the camel, which made him pass into dreamless sleep. Here we are, dog god Chenra Gejes. Wake up! A voice sounded. The dog winked, where are we? Have I slept at all? Elione jumped off his camel and helped his drowsy companion to do the same. Now let's go to my house first, or the Ries disc will kill you. Only slowly did the male's thoughts clear up. He realized that they must be in a village or a city. They were standing on a sandy square, where makeshift stalls could be found everywhere, whose protection from the sunlight consisted of colorful scraps of cloth. There was a hustle and bustle and everywhere people of different ages and both sexes were walking around. As if it were a matter of course, animals of different species trotted among them, poultry, goats and ancient dogs. They all had nothing in common with the Anthros Chenra knew from Alpha Vol, they were feral animals, not capable of language, and served humans merely as livestock and food animals. An Arabic language was undoubtedly spoken here, but Gejes did not understand it. The confusion was occasionally pierced by shouts in another language, which the male dog could locate in Greek. Greek and Arabic? He asked the attendant, who pushed his mount through the crowd while some people eyed the strange, dusty, canine guest. Obviously, not everyone had already met an anthro. The human man confirmed, yes, of course you will find Greeks here, in Yenebaean. Well, and Romans, of course. But I can't stand them. Very few can, which is why they don't show up very often. Yenebaean? The dog had already heard the name of this city. The architect had read in his past about a legendary place, which served as a place of worship for the jackal-headed god Anubis. The city had been named after him. In Gaja, it was called Anubaean in the Western world, which came from the Greek way of speaking. But in the now time, from which the Kisar came, it did not exist, or did not exist anymore. It was not clarified whether it had ever existed. Now he knew, probably as the only one who knew the now time, that it must have actually been so. I thought this city was a myth, the male admitted, looking at the yellow columns arranged around the marketplace. On them stood small sculptures of the god of the underworld, which the ravages of time had gnawed, but were not able to make them disappear completely. Whatever you say, dog god. We'll take care of you, the attendant spoke as they arrived at a stone dwelling. Here we are. They went inside and the male looked around. In one corner, smoking logs smoldered under a large cauldron, and the floor was covered with colorful, knotted rugs. A few veiled people of slender stature sat around a boulder, grinding grain seeds into flour with stones. As the two entered the room, the Alsatian noticed that some of them pulled their veils more tightly over their faces and lowered their heads, as if avoiding eye contact with the man at all costs. Elione offered the shepherd a seat at a wooden table, take a seat and be our guest, Chenra. The male dog did as he was told, and the host also sat down. As if on cue, two of the veiled men stood up and placed jugs at the table, which they humbly filled with water. Chenra tried to make out the face of the servant, but he knew how to turn his head to the side to prevent this. These are my four wives. They will give you everything you want. My children are on their way to fetch water, the man now explained, and Gejaz understood that women had a different status here than he knew from the present time. Are all the women here servants? In the dwelling the temperature was pleasantly cool and the air fresh. The smoke that came from under the boiler disappeared through an opening in the ceiling. While drinking from the jug, Elioni did not answer this question, but wanted to know, you are not from here, not from Tamari, right? No, you're right, the dog admitted, but he didn't speak the untruth either when he added, I come from very far away. There it is different. Women live on equal terms with men. It was clear to Chenra that he had to conceal the truth of his origin. People in the Egypt of the past could do nothing with things like time travel, alien worlds, the future. He also thought about the fact that he could disturb the timeline sensitively, should someone learn about his origin. It was necessary to avoid changing the course of time on Gaja at all costs. At least for the time being. The consequences would not have been foreseeable, which is why the male wanted to get an overview of when and where. If that is so, his host spoke, then you may not even know that in my country women have a high status. They can also hold political office. Like, for example, our current pharaoh Cleopatra. Yes, I understand, the Alsatian hastily interrupted him. What a bummer. Now the architect knows that Cleopatra rules, he then thought. With the interruption, he made sure that at least it was not clear which Cleopatra was currently in power. Thus, even if the author were reading along, he could not determine exactly where in time his protege was. Forgive me, Elioni. I am just tired. The trip wasn't very restful. I feel like I haven't slept. The man grinned, I understand that well, dog god. I have a second room back there. You can wash up and rest there. My women will be happy to take care of cleaning your gear, giving you clothes, and making your rest comfortable. He gestured with a hand to an opening in the wall through which light flickers of a fire were coming. The male nodded and when he stood up, Elioni unexpectedly grabbed him by the shoulder. The dog was startled when the human touched the protector and asked him, "Where is your armor from? That which you wear around your chest is not made of the materials I know. Nor are your legs wrapped in leather or wool. Where do you get such fine cloth? Macedonia?" Then it occurred to Chenra that he had not considered that while the protector would be useful, it might seem too exotic to those he was to meet in the past. "Well," he explained, "in my country, this chestwear is considered a status symbol. It is passed down from generation to generation. So it is an heirloom. I don't know how old it is or what it's made of. I thought it was useful for my journey, that's all." Suddenly, the human man bowed and asked for forgiveness, ashamed, "Please forgive me for touching you, dog god. I don't know what came over me. I'm sorry." Chenra recognized the embarrassed touch of the master of the house, which he expressed convincingly, even in front of his wives. "It's all right. Even if you say I'm a god, at least I'm a good one of them. Of course, you are forgiven." Elioni nodded and noted that the breastplate was a superbly crafted piece that surely cost a lot. The dog explained, "I can't say for sure, Elioni. It is, as I said, an heirloom. I know neither its age, nor the material, nor its original price. In any case, I would not sell it. That would bring shame on the family." "I'm sure you're right, sir," the man smiled. The sheepdog also grinned and bowed briefly to signal to those present that he would now go and rest. He entered the sparsely furnished side room, a small table stood next to a straw bed, from which the Alsatian had previously had to expel a goat that had been sleeping peacefully. A large tub was found here, already filled with steaming water. Finally taking a bath again. "I've already missed that," Chenra thought to himself and took off the dusty clothes. He let himself sink into the warm water and sighed loudly, closing his eyes and thinking, what would happen now, where should he start in his search for the origin? Was he in the right place? Egypt. That might be the cradle of civilization on Gaja, but what did the Vulpes Lupus Canis have to do with it? Why had the Ispiseka led him to this day, to this moment? Egypt, Tamari, was already several thousand years old, measured from the point in time when Chenra had put his paws in the sand. So why was he here right now? Suddenly he was harshly jerked out of his thoughts when Elioni's voice rang out, "Chenra. We thought that the sweetness of female company would surely contribute to your relaxation. This is my wife Esmera. She will give you fulfillment and take care of you. The male looked perplexed when he saw a Gajan woman in front of him, who was wrapped in thin cloth, but suddenly dropped it and thus stood stark naked. Elioni, I want to thank you, but... The Kisar stammered, but did not dare to tell his host that female beings were not his taste, Gajan women certainly not. The man leaned against the doorway to the room, chewed on a leaf again and grinned, "Don't you like her? You can have another, but Esmera is my most beautiful wife. Accept my gift as host. Do not refuse, for that is very offensive in this country." "Yes, but... Look at me, I'm a dog," the male dog pointed out, but his counterpart wouldn't hear of it, saying only that it would be an honor for him if one of his wives could unite with a god being like him. The Gajan stood in front of him, shamefacedly covering her breasts with her hands, goosebumps visible. She had turned her head to the side in embarrassment and looked down. When her husband had disappeared again, covering the entrance to the room with a curtain, Chenra addressed her in his deep voice, "Don't be afraid of me, Esmera. I certainly will not harm you. You are cold. Wait." He stood up without thinking about the fact that he was now exposing his entire body to the woman's intimidated gaze. She looked at him for a fraction of a second and then quickly turned her head to the side again. Gajes, used to it from his world and time, didn't mind standing unclothed in front of a stranger. So he climbed out of the tub splashing and gently put her cloak back on Esmera so she wouldn't have to freeze anymore. Her look now became self-conscious as the dog got back into the tub. "So you don't want me, dog god?" she asked, her voice tender and her lips quivering. One could hear that she blamed herself and her outer appearance for the rejection on the part of the supposed god, but she remained very sovereign and sublime. When Chenra sat down, he slowly shook his head, "It's not that. You are a human and I am a dog. We belong to different species. You're beautiful and your body is lovely, really. It just doesn't work. It's not meant to be, though your husband's gift honors me greatly." Now Esmera raised her chin, dropped her cover again, and stepped closer. "You heard what my husband said, don't refuse. You are a god and can have anything you want. Take what he offers you. Take what I offer you. It shall be a temptation that you may gladly succumb to," she threw at the overtaxed sovereign. He could no longer answer, so quickly the Egyptian climbed into the tub. Chenra tried to keep his distance, but the bathing vessel was not very large. "What are you doing?" he asked still wide-eyed, after which she planted a powerful kiss on his chaps in a flash, closing her eyes. Reflexively, the shepherd took Esmera's head between his hands and pushed her back. "Let's not do this," he began, startled, but again she beat him to it, slowly stroking his furry, wet chest downward toward the surface of the water. She looked at her counterpart attentively, while he sat motionless, tensed all his muscles and water drops ran along his massive body. She said softly, "So many scars and such a strong body. You must have fought many battles, if not be a hero, my dog god. Surely you have seen much, experienced much. You need rest. I sense that you are very tense. Let it be my task to bring you relief. I'm not a... ah." Before he could utter the sentence, Esmera had already slipped her hand under the surface of the water and was purposefully grasping his manhood. What was at first uncomfortable for him turned more and more into a feeling of well-being for the male when Elioni's wife brought her second hand also between his thighs into a position a little further down and began to massage. Now the Alsatian's mind stopped and all his muscles relaxed little by little. His shocked look changed to one of pleasure and his emotional excitement gave way more and more to sexual excitement. "Yes, men," I said to myself as I read the last lines. "The smaller part of the brain is located somewhere else. And when that takes control, it's all over. I didn't think a female, a human, could do that to him. Could this be happening right now? Was there just a human woman, who had lived factually quite a few years before him, manipulating his manhood at this moment? Not even in his wildest fantasies or the strangest dreams could the dog have imagined such a situation." The Gajan seemed satisfied when she felt that her counterpart was physically aroused. So she giggled softly and lowered her head into the water to let the sex with him begin and thus give the Kisar the promised satisfaction. In the dog's mind, there was something wrong with the situation, but this certainty gave room to another. He was a male and had not experienced release from sexual pressure for a long time. Unlike what was common among the Gajans, In his country, one did not expose oneself unnecessarily to abstinence, but regularly let the natural urges take their course. Besides, the woman wouldn't stop the hustle and bustle now, he was sure of that. It suddenly didn't matter that she was a female and a human being. Also, an Alsatian male fared like most men of all kinds. At a certain point, his mind stopped and he played along. The idea of morality, understanding and reason now no longer existed. Why wouldn't we want to play this game, since everyone involved wanted to experience it? All that could be seen now was him sitting in the tub, relaxed with his eyes closed and the surface of the water moving rhythmically. A human hand reached up and massaged the soft flanks of the male dog, who gradually fell into ecstasy. Deep relaxation and detachment. Now everything was the same for him. The sky was close. Sudden fatigue,